Thank you. Good morning. Come on, you guys can do better than that. Good morning. All right. Great. So this is loading up. I've got my phone up here so I can watch time, but I also want you to know I have this really cool Cheetos app on here, and it's called Total Distraction, and I'm from Wisconsin, and they've got a game called Floating Cheese. So, you know, if you lose me, it's to Floating Cheese, and just excuse me. No. So we're here today talking about food marketing to kids, and thank you for the great introduction. You know, one of the interesting experiences and really great experiences I've been able to have in my background is in tobacco work was working with teens who accepted the fact that they were being marketed to. And not only did they accept it and they understood it, and there was a lot of great research around it, but they flipped the script. And one of the things that was so terrific for me to see was young people who took that concept of targeting, and nobody did targeting more than and still does than the tobacco industry, and flipping it around and saying we're going to target tobacco, we're going to harness rebellion. And so we've got it's just terrific experience in learning about marketing and learning how teens market. I'm unfortunately too old to really understand the Cheetos app and all this kind of stuff, but. You know, I think we all come to this work with great commitment, and knowing that. But we also know we look around this room. Frankly, we're not that diverse of a room. We're doing better as a movement. We're not that diverse. We're also I apologize to everybody. Say we're pretty old when it comes to this topic. And so we need to embrace the fact that we are not the target market here. And so we all have to start with it with a concept. We have a lot to learn. So I have no conflicts or considerations to disclose. So, you know, talk a little bit about the problem. We don't have a ton of time. So, you know, we see this very crowded environment. And obviously, you know, the big wigs, the heavyweights, the big brains, Institute of Medicine and others have jumped in. And you all probably heard this. I'm not going to spend a lot of time, but I wanted to just give a little bit of the foundation here. And as many as you may know, food and beverage companies are spending nearly $2 billion a year advertising to kids. These aren't, you know, they're not advertising the fresh fruits and vegetables. You guys know what, you know, if we go, you know, back, these are the things that they're being advertised to our children. So no surprise there. You think of the school environment where we've seen a ton of progress. I'm going to talk about this a little bit more, but we still have 49% of middle and high schools allowing junk food advertising in schools. So we have a long way to go. You know, just some of the basics. Professor Dorfman teaches about this to her classes and to national partners, and we'll talk about their role at Berkeley Media Studies Group in just a second and what we're doing. But just the basics. So product, price, place, and promotion. And you know, keep in mind here, you know, we all think of TV as the 300-pound gorilla. I'm concerned about my children watching TV. You know, children, on average, young people get about 40,000 ads on television, impressions that they see per year. And so we all think about that, particularly in our generation. We know television. We grew up with television. We saw a lot of this. But this isn't, it's hard to say what's a bigger problem than something else, but if you're stopping at television, you're missing the boat. That now, you know, it's concepts of always on. Kids are always, there's always a screen, there's always an opportunity to reach children. And so the concept of marketing now is much more universal than when we sat in front of a television and looked at what came on during the break in cartoons or for Me Little Rascals or whatever. You know, ideas of you know, really insidious concepts of friends as ambassadors. And so we use our peers to deliver messages. We use social media, we use that Cheetos app. So this concept that there really is no boundary. The televisions are so horribly uninteractive. You know, you can pump out endless messages on television, but really it's much better if you can get somebody's friend to tell them, hey, this is cool, right? Is this resonating with folks? Yeah, I see a lot of nodding. Okay, and one of the highlights you'll see from leading experts in the field is, in particular, is that priority populations get a double dose. In that you see kids getting, they get the television, they get the mass market stuff, and then they get particular population tailored marketing on top of that. And so our populations who are most adversely affected by health outcomes are getting a double dose of this. And then finally, on top of that, we have something that I call, in a very untechnical term, a parental paradox. And there's some great research that Robert Wood Johnson Foundation funded with Berkeley Media Studies Group, and CSPI was very involved, and there are other presentations to fully present on it. But this is very new, they're looking at parents and parents' perceptions of food marketing to children. And parents look at this and say, it's annoying, it's not harmful. And that's really dangerous because we can all, as parents, we can sit down in our neighborhoods and we can say, you know, I might be able to, this may be the last year I can heft my three children, but this concept that I can hold them close and I can do, knowing that there are things that are going to come at them, I can do a reasonable job of holding them close and protecting them. And this stuff's annoying, but it's not harmful. And in particular, we say, I think for my children it's okay, that I can handle it, for my kids it's different. We have to take a much more population-based approach than that. And we have to fundamentally move the concept from annoying to harmful. And you know, for us in the field, we all care about it, we're all passionate about it. It's, again, we're not the target market. So we really have to take ourselves out of our own shoes and really think about what is the difference, what is the barrier between annoying and harmful. And I'll tell you what it is, it's public policy. When somebody thinks something is annoying, they're more likely to say, you know what, we don't need a new law, status quo is okay, everything is okay. I don't like it, it's a little annoying, I'll ask the company to stop doing it. When it's harmful, we say we need a solution. Children are the most important people in our society, very easy to say. When they are being harmed, we make solutions. So this is fundamentally our change model for public health in this space and so many others, is that we have to move from annoying to harmful. So I'd say the last thing is, just being a parent, is that as much as I want my kids to eat good stuff, the messaging environment, as Lori Dorfman will tell you, is so hideously skewed. That it's not just that the harmful stuff is being pumped out endlessly, it's that the good choices, the good fruits and vegetables and such, are not even in the discussion, particularly from a mass media standpoint. Okay, so American Heart Association recognized this and saw this problem, and if you're familiar with American Heart Association, you know we take very careful, deliberate positions, publish them. So this is up on the web. This has been published. You can see the key components to it, talking about marketing and toys. You go back to those four P's, product, price, place, and promotion. Our core position goes after all of those. But I also want to read from the full position, just a really critical line here, which is, the American Heart Association sees no ethical, political, scientific, or social justification for marketing and advertising low-nutrient, high-calorie foods to children. So let me say that again. The American Heart Association sees no ethical, political, scientific, or social justification for marketing and advertising low-nutrient, high-caloric foods to children. So this is not just the American Heart Association. This is a lot of organizations. It's a lot of individuals, a lot of people. But what I think is really important there is we're jumping into the values. And that this is beyond the science, this is beyond the practice, this goes into our hearts and into what we really believe about protecting children. Okay, so outgrowth of the work of our organization in this space and in others in childhood obesity, nutrition, physical activity is a new partnership. How many of you have heard of Voices for Healthy Kids? Okay, everybody else, if you didn't raise your hand, you got to go down to the booth, the American Heart Association booth, and pick up some of our materials. This is a really exciting new partnership, and I've been involved in this from the start. We're really only in year two, and I'm going to talk about some of the partners we've brought into this initiative. But it's really exciting, and I would invite you to check us out on the web, healthykids.org, and learn more and get involved. You kind of have to squint a little bit so everybody can stand up and get real close. There are six general topic areas, and these mirror the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation's priorities. And so we're talking today about protecting children from unhealthy food and beverage marketing, so number three there. But I'll touch again back on this slide, and that really these are the insidiousness of this problem is that the tentacles are everywhere. And so this is really food marketing to kids is, yes, we give it a number, we give it a category, but we can't silo it off. We've got to do integrated approaches. Okay, so building out the Voices initiative, really initial step, and in many ways predated the start of our actual work on Voices, was bringing together a team of national organizations who were leaders. In this space, the Marketing Matters Hub is led by Berkeley Media Studies Group with incredible involvement from Center for Science and Public Interest. Really great folks who were already leaders in their own right, and the work very much engages through the existing food marketing work group. And so I encourage you all to use their website as a resource. It's a terrific organizing arm. American Heart Association's been involved, again, predating the Voices Initiative, very involved in the food marketing work group. So if you haven't seen those resources and use this, the Wall of Shame is cool. Again, opportunities to take action. And other things. So really important leaders in this space. So I want to talk about I'm going to touch on two particular public policies that we are focusing on through Voices that are in this space, restaurant marketing and school marketing. And I'm going to come back to talk about each of them a little bit, but this is the main focus for our Voices initiative, and mostly state and local public policy, but knowing, again, that all this is in quite that interlaced environment of multiple levels. There's tremendous federal action, tremendous local action, school action, community action. So our change model here is outlined in this slide. I'm not going to go through all of them, but I want to touch on a couple of these components. It's an integrated approach to passing public policy and changing health outcomes through public policy. And how are we doing on time, by the way? Okay, great. I want to make sure you all know there's an opportunity for funding here. We're funding campaigns. If you're working at the state or local level on one of those two topics and you're trying to change public policy, look us up. There's a lot on this slide. Again, you can come down to our booth and pick this slide up. But these are various funding opportunities. The main one is the first one in blue, which is our open RFA grant of grants up to about $90,000 for organizations that are leading coalitions, leading campaigns. In very short term, we're looking for people who are leading promising campaigns, and we have training and other opportunities. If you're not ready to do this year, but you think maybe next year, we want to know and talk to you now. There's our website with some eligibility information. This is all, you don't have to write it down. Don't anybody hurt your wrist. This is all on the web at healthykids.org, voicesforhealthykids.org. And I'm happy to talk to you about it more. So also in this integrated approach are tools and toolkits. These are beasts, these toolkits. They're more than 100 pages. We've completed several of them already, we have two that are in the works right now and should be out in the next couple months, nutritional standards for kids' restaurant meals and restricted marketing of foods in schools and on buses. So these are already in the works. There's some policy specifics, some fact sheets. There's also, you know, how do you do a day at the Capitol? How do you do a community meeting? There's model tweets. There's some model paid media as part of these that you can download and customize for yourself. So really great. The toolkits live in, we distinguish between toolkits and toolbox. And toolboxes, I'm sure there's a lot of organizations in this represented in this room already with tremendous resources. We continue to produce more, and so does the hub under our initiative. So that toolbox is growing and dynamic all the time. So I can't even begin to tell you everything in there, but we're happy to help you find it all. So just know that there's a lot of help out there. Here's just a little bit more about what's in those toolkits. Okay, so coming back to our approach through Voices to public policy change at the state and local level, there is a key consideration here, and it's legal. And everybody knows that there is, you know, major questions of can we regulate free speech. So I want to address this very quickly, and first I want to say that I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not representing, AHA is not representing legal advice for anybody. So just an important clarification. There are two really tremendous organizations out there. Their staffs are here and throughout. You may well know them, the Public Health Law Center and Change Lab Solutions. They do legal TA, and so can provide tremendous assistance in this regard. So I definitely point you in their direction. But just again, what I'm going to share with you particularly is a strategic consideration. And so when you think of a legal consideration, you think, am I breaking a law or am I facing a lawsuit or something like that? When we think of a strategic consideration, to take one step back and say, am I ready to fight that lawsuit? Am I ready to take that on? Or maybe does the issue not have clarity? Do we not know? So you think of the New York City silent ban effort on sugar-sweetened beverages. There was that went to the courts. Everybody knew it was going to the courts. And so when you start something like that, you have to have a legal strategy and legal resources. So when we talk about strategic legal considerations, we're talking beyond just what's in the precedent. We're saying what might we challenge as what challenges might we face as advocates. So, you know, just in very general concepts of what's driven our approach so far for Voices, is that the courts are generally moving towards more speech protection, and we're hearing that from Change Labs and from Public Health Law Center in particular, so in some cases our strategic focus is actually on business practices. So when we talk about regulating restaurant meals to kids, you might say, well, why aren't we regulating what McDonald's can advertise on television? Well, maybe that's a federal level consideration, or maybe there are other legal challenges. But what we can do, we can regulate their business practices. And providing a toy with a meal is a business practice. Providing soda with a meal is a business practice. So those are guiding some of our considerations here, and they're very different in these two spaces. I'm gonna start just real quick on restaurant marketing. So again, I said we're really going after those business practices. We want to change. What can you? We want communities. We want states to step in and say this is the nutritional content of a kid's meal. This is what it can and can't be. And it's what's in the meal itself. What's the nutritional content in the meal itself? It's the beverage. So no sugar sweetened beverage with a kid's meal. And it's the toys that we should not be. There's no need for a toy to be sold with unhealthy foods. So those are the fundamental pillars to our approach there. And I'll say, you know, it's an area where there's been some really interesting community-level work, and there's also been interesting federal-level work. And connecting those up, it's an area where we need a lot of growth, and then we need a lot of research on what worked. And so I think we can all look at it as a real developing area, even though it's not new work. It's very much a developing area of work. School marketing is a really different approach, and I'm gonna share with you from Change Labs here. Solutions is just a quick quote from them. Because of the unique educational mission of schools, the First Amendment leaves a lot of leeway for government to regulate the types of commercial messages that are allowed on school grounds. So there is feeling from the legal experts that there's a really different environment. And I think that's common sense, right? Is that common sense to everybody? It's a school. It's a very protected environment. We see that the school environment, it comes back to one of our other six core topics here for Voices, is improving nutritional quality of snack foods and beverages in schools. And we've seen a ton of progress, right? How many of you are familiar with school meals and competitive foods progress at the federal level? Anybody working in their school on implementation of these things? Going pretty well? So it's really challenging, right? You may either know it from your school, or you may see it on the Daily Show, kids posting videos going viral about hating new standards. But we're really tremendous progress. We're in a really interesting space now where we have foods that aren't allowed to be sold in schools that are still marketed in schools. Are you seeing that in your school?
I work at the State Department of Education. Okay.
Yeah, so it's a unique time, and so what we want states to there's a proposed federal wellness policy. We're waiting for the federal rule to be published and have a comment period. Knowing that the changes in the seas in federal government and in the partisan shift, who knows what's going to happen with that. We really, and don't take that as discouragement. There's a ton of great stuff in that rule, and we look to see it finalized and implemented. But nobody needs to wait. That's our big takeaway here. This is a great little infographic done by one of our grantees of our Voices Initiative, Upstream Public Health in Oregon, and they're just polishing this up. And I asked them if I could put it in the PowerPoint. But it's a great example when we say, how many of you, when you heard marketing in schools, how many of you said, really, is that still going on? I'm one of those folks, and I've got three kids in school. But here's the great example, and I see all of these. So you see the, there's been some change in vending, but is there still the vending machine with the big sign on it? Or you're getting coupons. My kids get pizza coupons, not just at school, but at the library. And then here's a real-world example of that third one. See down at the bottom, you've got the sponsorship of the scoreboard of the high school playground, and that is essential funding in many cases. That this is not, these are people who need money, need to have a scoreboard, and so often these sponsors are saluted and really needed. So it's quite a challenging environment. So knowing I'm just about out of time, again, I wanted to circle back to what I said at the start. There are a lot of pieces of work on this, and there are some really important players I want to highlight. I mentioned the Food Marketing Work Group and the great resources there. Alliance for a Healthier Generation is producing new model school or district wellness policy. This will be out in not too long. They told me not to say a date. I asked them if I could mention it was coming, and they said yes. So until it comes out, the American Heart Association can't say we endorse it or don't endorse it, but it's great. So I can use the more common language and just say it'll be a really good product, and look for that, use it. And again, that's the school and the district level. You got the Rudd Center doing terrific work out there, some great research. I know Mary Storys here has done some really remarkable research in this, Shariki as well. So a lot. This whole conference is full of tremendous contributors. So I just want you to walk away thinking, what's my role? What can I do? And a couple things. So you can come down to our booth and you can sign up for our Voices newsletter so you can hear more about what we're doing at Voices. You can go to preventobesity.net. How many of you are supporters? How many of you are signed up? Yeah, you better be. Anybody else? Show ahead one more time. Who's signed up? So everybody in this room should be on preventobesity.net. So go to preventobesity.net, sign up. It's a great opportunity. It's a great online network for advocates covering all these different, all six of those policy spaces. We do advocacy campaigns. There's also, once you sign up, then you apply to become a leader. I will approve you personally. Don't worry about it. But once you're a leader, then the cool thing is you can connect all the leaders. You can look at the map, find out all the leaders in your community. Great for networking. There's a weekly newsletter featuring a lot of this work. So sign up and then apply for a leader right away. It's really tremendous. More than 3,000 leaders and about 300,000 members. So we need you to be part of that. So you can just go right online. And just get involved. Get involved in your school. Get involved with your State Department of Education. Give them a hard time when they need to do better. I know the head of food service in my children's school district, and I don't give them a hard time, but I talk to them all the time. And what are your challenges, and what's going on, and how can we be good partners? And it starts by opening those dialogues. So that's it. Questions? Covered it all. Good night, everybody. We can also do group questions at the end. Yeah?
Is there, in the toolkits you're mentioning, is there any focus on how to affect the big decision makers? In that what we're finding, especially as it relates to competitive food, is our food service staff really on board. There are dietitians. They go in there and they're met with resistance from both the principal and the superintendent. And any time that we try to do any sort of outreach, we reach out to the principal and they forward all of our information to the food service director. And so
yeah, they just pass it out. There are a couple things. There's one is what are the resources, but more important is what you do with them. Because yes, there are some in our toolkits. The Alliance's updated model policy and tools would be great. Other organizations have terrific toolkits. So I'm not pushing any one or another. They're out there. But how many of you think good ideas win? It's a power building. So I'm an advocate. I'm not a scientist. I'm an advocate, which is we don't get anything we don't build power for. And so if those people are ignoring it, and it's exactly what happens, is you go to the, and you can even be a, I'm sure it's not yours, but a State Department of Ed may well push it down to the district, district pushes it down to the food service, to the person who has no power. And then they say to the person who has no power, here are your talking points for responding, you go ahead and respond to them while I ignore it. That they're ignoring that because we haven't built enough power. And so it starts but we need to build our coalitions, and there's an important role for state agencies. There's a critical role for organizations that have the ability to lobby. There's a critical role for all of us as individuals. That is a problem of power. It's nothing else. It's a problem of power. It's not. We need to get you the tools you need, but we need to put the power behind it.
Thank you.
it going? Yeah, there are a lot of people at this conference. It'd be better to ask. There is a lot of interest there. I think Berkeley is a turning point, is a critical turning point. I think when I talk about sort of you need legal resources for legal strategy, don't be shocked to see that one. Get challenges. We've seen a lot of communities trying to take it on, and there have been multiple schools of thought. There are those who say we just need to pass something, and something's got to go. And the American Heart Association's position is we got to pass something that's going to have proven, or as close to proven as we can get, interventions, outcomes. But I see it continuing to grow. We continue to be very much focused on that as one of the elements. Again, this integrated approach. But yeah, it's critical, and price elasticity is a really effective tool. So particularly when you think of who's most price sensitive, lower income, higher health disparities. Now, you need to do a lot more than just a passive price elasticity. But yeah, it's going to keep going.